This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, April 19th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, Boulder's Naropa University is kicking off its Earth Justice Week today. We'll hear from a couple of keynote speakers. Cacti are in a prickly situation. That story and more on H2O Radio's This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth? Coming up on The Science Show, climate change and comedy. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker, known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Terry Reardon will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Louisville voters will decide today the fate of the proposed Redtail Ridge development planned for the long-vacant and former Phillips 66 site along Highway 36. The vote decides on how to develop the nearly 400 acres worth of land into 3 million square feet of office, industrial, and flexible use buildings. After the Louisville City Council narrowly approved Redtail Ridge last year, residents opposing the development gathered enough signatures to force the City Council to reconsider the proposed development. Instead of reversing its decision, council members opted to place the matter before the city's voters in a special election. According to the Daily Camera, the special election has been contentious, with both sides of the issue accusing the other of using underhanded tactics. Boulder Fire Rescue investigators announced Monday that discarded smoking material, such as a cigarette, placed in a pot with potting mix and dried and dead plants, caused the apartment fire on the 2800 block of Kalmia Avenue. The fire occurred late last month and damaged two buildings, along with displacing 24 families. According to the Daily Camera, within a week of the fire, investigators ruled out foul play and determined the fire started on a third-floor balcony and moved through the attic of the buildings and above the sprinkler system. Fire officials believe the incident was an accident and have charged no one with starting the fire. A three-year-old Denver boy remains in critical condition after accidentally shooting himself Sunday afternoon. The Denver Post reports the incident marks a second time in a week that a Colorado child has harmed themselves with a weapon. A six-year-old Fort Collins boy died last week after shooting himself by mistake. The Colorado legislature passed a law last year that requires owners of firearms to safely and responsibly store firearms away from children and unauthorized users. Colorado lawmakers create a bill aimed at helping with the housing crisis. House Bill 1282 would give $40 million towards the factory-built modular homes industry. By creating the bill, Colorado lawmakers are recognizing the statewide housing shortage that's left many residents priced out of the market. The bill's proposal would give grants or loans to new or existing modular housing businesses. The bill, known as the Innovative Housing Incentive Program, is a $40 million loan program for modular home manufacturers to use to pay workers and cover operating expenses, including payroll, inventory, and materials. The prices of homes in mountain towns have doubled in the last 2 years. The new program would attempt to help open the door to home ownership to Coloradans who can't afford their own place, are stuck in a cycle of renting, or are considering moving away. There are just a few companies in Colorado currently building homes and factories. The construction cost for modular homes is showing to be 15 to 30% lower than traditional homes. The $40 million is to come from federal coronavirus aid through the American Rescue Plan Act. The Denver City Council has approved more than $300 million in contract add-ons to the Concourse Expansion Program at the city's International Airport. The funding, approved Monday night, will go towards upgrades like expanding ground loading at Concourse A, where Frontier Airlines will have 14 gates. Starting in 2024, Frontier passengers will board and exit a plane using ground-level ramps and stairs connected to the plane's front and rear doors. Some members of the City Council voiced frustration with the airport's contract process, which continues to become more expensive. According to the Denver Post, an airport official said the large construction firms will subcontract out much of the airport's new work to smaller companies. Florida-based consulting company IntegraAssure will host a town hall tonight to update Aurora residents on the city's progress in addressing systematic issues within the city's police and fire departments. Aurora chose the company to oversee the city's consent decree with the state. Aurora and the state entered into a consent decree last year shortly after the Attorney General released his report, which found the city's safety agencies had patterns of using excessive force, violating civil rights, and showing bias towards people of color. Earlier this month, the conservative majority on Aurora City Council fired reformist police chief Vanessa Wilson. A district court has also delayed a probable cause hearing for the three police officers and two paramedics who are facing grand jury indictments stemming from the 2019 killing of 23-year-old Elijah McClain. The town hall event will start at 7:30 p.m. and will take place at the Aurora Municipal Center. Residents can also view the event on auroratv.org or on the city's YouTube channel. Today's weather includes mostly sunny skies with highs in the upper 70s. Winds could gust as high as 28 miles per hour. They're very warm and dry conditions this afternoon will prompt a red flag warning for the region in effect from noon to 8 p.m. Tonight, there is a 20% chance of showers after midnight for Boulder and Fort Collins. Lows will be in the 40s. The current temperature in Boulder is 36 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Naropa University is kicking off its Earth Justice Week today with a bicycle party and event to support native pollinators. Also featured is a keynote discussion on reconnecting to soil, self, and society. I'm joined live by two of the keynote panelists. Ruth Wallen is Naropa University's visiting Lens Scholar. She is a multimedia artist and writer whose work is dedicated to encouraging dialogue around ecological and social justice. After working as an environmental scientist, she turned to art to address the values informing environmental policy. Welcome. Anna Anu is a poet and multimedia artist. She's my second guest, and she's also an MFA candidate at Naropa University. So welcome to you both this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Can one of you start by giving listeners a sense of what all Naropa University is offering through the Earth Justice Week activities?
Okay, I will try, but I wish I had the list in front of me. We'll have activities every day starting today, which, as you mentioned, planting pollinator gardens and the bicycling activity. Tomorrow, there is a keynote presentation at noon, and there's a big community celebration afterwards. I don't know.
Actually,
I don't know if you want to pick up.
We're joined. I see that Michael Bauer is also
Michael
of Naropa University is also here with us now. Michael, could you give us just a very quick overview of what people who are interested in participating can expect?
Good morning. Thank you, Shannon. Earth Justice Week is how we root into the intersections of ecological and social justice. It's sort of our take on Earth Week and Earth Day, if you will. And the keynote address is really the highlight and centering the voices of Anna, Ruth, and our senior adjunct faculty, Ian Sanderson, to discuss, to sort of root into those intersections, as I mentioned, particularly around the question of reconnecting to self, society, and soil. That keynote is from noon to 1:30, as you mentioned. And the other sort of signature event that we're supporting this week is on Friday. There is a meditation with Earth that's a collaboration between Naropa's Joanna Macy Center for Resilience and Regeneration, the Green Faith Boulder, and Eon Zen Center, where we'll be meeting at Central Park at Canyon and Broadway, or 13th and Broadway in Boulder, at noon to meditate with Earth. And that'll be an invocation by Masters of Divinity candidate Natalie Schreiber, and then a sitting practice, and then some live music. And then we hope to filter into a climate strike that's being led by students, particularly from Fairview High School in the Fridays for Future and Extinction Rebellion tradition on the corner of Broadway and Canyon there. They'll be there from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. We'll join them around noon to take what Joanna Macy calls the sort of three dimensions of the great turning. The sitting practice would be the one dimension shifts in consciousness. And then the climate strike would be what she calls holding actions, stopping the destruction, and also discussing, educating, making folks aware of things. So those are kind of the two signature events, and I appreciate you inviting us on today.
Sure thing. Back to Ruth and Anna. Both of you are co-hosting a keynote panel discussion on reconnecting to soil, self, and society. What does that connection entail?
I'll speak for myself and my work first. I'm often working in the space between poetics and public art. Simply, I make large poetic signs in public spaces with natural materials, often plants. In my time at Naropa, I've completed about 10 of these projects, often working with different plants like the Rocky Mountain juniper, the waters of Lake Dillon, quaking aspen, dune grass, addressing always simultaneously environmental and social issues. This project that we're working on as a result of the Afrofuturist event last week will be writing Politic, Our Poem, on the Naropa Arapaho Sycamore Hall building, and will be a medley of material coming out of the earth currently after the winter season.
Ruth, touching on the societal aspect of this discussion, I see that you've been active in the border region. You're the past president of the Binational Association for Schools of Communication in the Californias and a Fulbright lecturer at the Autonomous University of Baja California. What are your reflections on how binational cross-border connections fit into the larger theme of soil, self, and society?
Wow, I'm glad you asked that, though it's something I've thought about less since I've been here. First of all, as we all know, any environmental issues don't stop at the border. And one of the challenging issues in Southern California has been the building of increasingly large border walls that prevent the crossing of animals, but don't prevent anything from happening in the atmosphere. So there are organizations that I'm involved in Southern California, including the Climate Science Alliance, that very much work cross-border and work with all of the tribes. And this is a global issue. So I think we all have to start with wherever we're located, and then work, you know, in a global way. So we have, through the associations I've involved in, done a lot of work around climate communication cross-border. And we do a lot of exchanges with university students. And many of the students, I hate to say it, in the U.S. aren't aware of the vibrant communities in Baja California, academic and intellectual exchanges.
And taking it back to the local from the global or from the international, what are some things that people can do right here in Boulder to promote soil health and the health of native plant pollinators?
Well, if I can just say one thing, I've been really impressed by the Cool Boulder initiative, which is taking compost, all the compost, and spreading it on agricultural lands. And I think what people don't realize is, yes, we need to absolutely lower fossil fuel emissions, but we also need to nurture the earth and nurture the soil. I mean, right now we're taking, there's predictions that with the current agricultural practices, we have about 40 or 50 years of sustainable soils left. But instead, we could be nurturing the soil through composting, which you can do in your home, you can do by contributing to the community through pollinator gardens, not using pesticides or fertilizers. We can't keep those inputs, then end up in the waste stream and end up increasing, you know, lack of balance in nutrient and nitrogen cycles. And the soil can also become an incredible carbon sink instead of a carbon source. So revisioning agriculture from your practices in your gardens to what you, how you consume food and what food you choose to consume, to supporting all the local farms, to supporting efforts, and there was great panels on this at the CWA conference in Boulder, that we really can re-envision industrial agriculture and must.
My guests today have been Ruth Wallen and Anna Anu, and also Michael Bauer. They're all participating in this week's Naropa University Earth Justice Week. Ruth and Anna are keynote speakers. If you want to find out more information about what all is on offer at the Earth Justice Week, you can find that online at earthjusticeweek.org. Thanks to all three of you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you so much.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Cacti are in a prickly situation. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The Biden administration is considering a first-ever action plan for global water security.
Axios reports that the plan seeks to protect the world's water resources, not just those of the U.S. If approved, it would create a global framework for ensuring universal access to clean and reliable water.
The plan comes as the lack of access to water threatens many around the world. According to the UN, global demand will exceed supply by 40% in just 8 years. About 2 billion people now lack safe drinking water, and many more do not have access to sanitation.
Besides the impact on human lives, this crisis raises the risk of border conflicts, cyber attacks on water systems, and increased migration. The World Bank stated that climate change could exacerbate vulnerabilities and create tensions and instability.
Recognizing that global water security is tied to national security, the goals of the plan would be to ensure America's supplies and prevent conflicts, including in Africa and the Middle East.
Sand is used in many products, including concrete, computer chips, and glass. Most of it comes from lakes, rivers, beaches, and the sea.
The demand for sand has tripled over the last 20 years, due mostly to population growth and urbanization. It is the most exploited natural resource on the planet after water.
Unsustainable sand mining can result in riverbanks collapsing, coastal erosion, and biodiversity loss. Also, the resource is at the center of a vast international criminal trade in which people have been killed.
Researchers at the University of Geneva and the University of Queensland say they have found a way to increase the supply of sand while solving another environmental problem: leftover material from mining, which is the world's largest waste stream.
What they call ore sand is a byproduct as rocks are crushed to extract metals. Ore sand has a large potential for reducing the amount of the resource taken from natural environments, and using it would move toward a more circular economy.
The research also shows that using mining waste instead of sand from rivers, lakes, and coastlines could lead to net reductions in carbon emissions, both from production and transportation.
Cacti are in a prickly situation. A new study led by the University of Arizona has found that a high percentage of them could succumb to climate change by the middle of the century.
It's a surprising finding, given we picture cactus as tough, spiny plants living in harsh desert conditions. But cacti inhabit a range of ecosystems, from rainforests to mountains and coastlines, where they've adapted to their niche environments. Unfortunately, as the planet warms, that adaptation could be their undoing.
As the New York Times reports, researchers looked at over 400 cactus species and how their geographic range could shift under three carbon emission scenarios.
They found that in all cases, climate change put 60 to 90% of cactus species at a higher risk of extinction by mid to late century, as the amount of habitat they are suited to shrinks. And that's not even taking into account other threats like ecosystem destruction, poaching, or wildfires.
The researchers say cacti in Florida, central Mexico, and large parts of Brazil could be the most impacted. And finally, we know that humans are far from the only living beings that communicate. Dogs bark, whales sing, and mushrooms talk.
That's what Professor Andrew Adamatsky at the University of the West of England suggests. In a recent study, he thinks he's found evidence that some fungi produce electrical impulses in patterns that resemble human speech.
Mushrooms that you see on the surface are the fruits of an underground fungal organism connected by a network called mycelium, a structure similar to neurons in the human body. Adamatsky wanted to investigate if signals traveling through the network help the fungi communicate.
For his experiment, he put tiny electrodes into the root network of four fungi species, Enoki, Splitgill, Ghost, and Caterpillar, to measure spikes in electrical activity. He found spikes often clustered into trains of activity, creating a vocabulary of nearly 50 words.
According to The Guardian, the Splitgill mushroom, which feeds off wood, was the most chatty. Adamatsky observed sharp spikes in its electrical signals when its roots encountered pieces of wood, which he thinks was a fungi's way of telling other mushrooms it had scored some food.
Or not, Adamatsky concedes his findings could be meaningless, but thinks the spiking events don't seem random.
Some scientists are skeptical, calling the suggestion of a fungal language, quote, over-enthusiastic, but they should beware they risk mushrooms talking behind their backs.
That's it for this week in Water. Support comes from GC Green, a veteran, woman, and Native American-owned clean energy and resiliency solutions company. Learn more at gcgreen.com.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Yes, I'm calling about the show with Duncan Campbell and Lisa Graves the other day on Connections. They did a very good job of describing the situation with Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, and the nuances involved with him getting in office. Very important information. Now we need to do something about it. All right, that's all for now.
Hi, what happened to TUC Radio? We need that show on as much as possible, please.
I found it interesting how Amy Goodman's radio broadcast kind of went on the blip, and the person in charge there at your radio station somehow got things going again. And I just have to say, I love how KGNU keeps the news coming somehow. Very appreciative of how you all keep the information flowing. And in these scary times, I'm glad to have y'all in the neighborhood. Thanks so much.
Hi, this is Evan Ravitz. 3 weeks ago, Shannon hosted a call-in show about KGNU news coverage. I tried to call in. KGNU has good international and national news and what seems to be reasonable Colorado news. But as someone who's been to more council meetings than any sitting council member, local news is sadly deficient. For example, few people know that in the last 3 years, the city has had to replace the city manager, the city attorney, the city clerk, the city IT director, transportation director twice, facilities director, city spokesman, human resources director, finance director, planning director, and a police chief. That's 9 departments out of 29, plus the top dogs, the city manager and the city attorney. This is not normal, especially since Boulder pays more than most. The former city manager, city attorney, and city IT director all blatantly lied to city council and us about our new first-in-the-nation online petitioning for direct democracy, which I spearheaded as a member of the city's elections working group. I have proof of this on video and audio. Now that both the camera and Yellow Scene have published the link to the proof, let's see if KGNU will broadcast it. Just go to tinyurl.com/petition story. That's tinyurl.com/petition story.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth to learn about the highlights of the recent Intergovernmental Climate Report from Max Boykoff, who is a contributing author to the Climate Report and chair of the Environmental Studies Department at CU Boulder. That's coming up just after the news headlines from the BBC.